This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It is the post-secondary Catholic institution for the Diocese of Covington, and it's a year into its university status. Now Thomas More has a new president, too, as the Crestview Hills campus continues to expand its academic footprint and athletic dominance. Joining Cincinnati Edition is the new president of Thomas More University, Joseph Chillo. Welcome, Dr. Chillo.
Well, thank you, Michael. I'm delighted to be here today.
Great to have you. 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you've got questions about Thomas More or for Dr. Chillo. You can also email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show. So, Dr. Chillo, Thomas More spent about 9 months or more looking for its next president before announcing that you're the guy. What attracted you to this position?
Well, I think Thomas More University is a terrific and vibrant institution. I think it has a strong Catholic tradition and certainly value-based education. When I was looking at institutions and doing the presidential search, there were really three important criteria. You know, one was a strong sense of community, and I think certainly as being a newest member of the Northern Kentucky area community, that this is just a fantastic place to be. I see the vibrancy of Northern Kentucky, the Cincinnati greater area, the transformation that the city has been going through. All of those things, you know, led to our decision that this is a great place to be. The second element was to make sure that we were selecting an institution that was truly vibrant and had a meaningful educational experience and certainly outcomes for our students and our alumni. And Thomas More checks off both of those boxes. And then the third part was a funny story I tell folks at Thomas More is where our family wanted to be. Because as you can imagine, when you go through these presidential searches, they are a long period of time. Thomas More is 9 months and many others follow that same trajectory. And my children, Colin, who's 15, and Emma, who's 13, you know, grew up on college campuses. You know, I've been involved with colleges and universities for more than 25 years. And given their ages, they've grown up on college campuses. And as they've been involved in a search process, you know, as many colleges and universities do these community meet and greets, they tag along. And they tend to be my harshest critics when we do these. And after we had a chance to meet the community and meet members of Thomas More, who were extremely friendly, authentic, my son and daughter came to me and said, "This is where we want to be." And right off the bat, we were done. And so my wife and I both had a real good sense of community, a sense of connection. You know, we're looking forward to being, you know, members of Northern Kentucky, members of the Cincinnati community. And we're, you know, we just bought a home in Union, Kentucky. And so all of the things that we're looking forward to, this area has everything that we're looking for. And so we're just a
career in your life in the East, so New York and New England. And I'm curious about what your impression is so far of the Southern Midwest. What's different for you?
Well, certainly sports teams are a bit different. You know, growing up in New York, certainly being a Yankee fan, but, you know, as I joke with my son, you know, he's grown up being a Red Sox and Patriot fan, and they just win. You know, I had a great opportunity this past week to attend Cincinnati Reds Johnny Bench event. And, you know, growing up in the 70s, you know, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, George Foster were just the idols that you played in wiffle ball in your backyard. And so it was fun to kind of have that connection. But certainly as we were looking at Northern Kentucky and coming here, it was that genuineness and friendliness that really appealed to us because quite honestly, you don't get that in New York and Boston. You know, people make eye contact to you. They really want to know how you're doing. And that just struck me within the first hours of being here.
Have you had the chili yet?
Haven't had the chili yet.
You haven't had the chili yet.
I was told Skyline.
Or Gold Star, or Gold Dixie, Star. Or Empress, or Camp Washington, or any corner you're on, you're bound to find a bowl of chili somewhere. But yeah, you got. I want you to report back.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out how you put chili on spaghetti, but we're still trying to figure that out.
Well, the Greeks figured it out. They brought it here, and I think that you'll like it. So you come to Thomas More amid some very serious transitions. So it went from Thomas More College last year to Thomas More University. I know you've only been here a short time, but I mean, you've been in higher education a long time. What does that mean for the institution now a year into this?
Yeah, I think it really reflects the vibrancy and growth of Thomas More University. I think if you take a look at Thomas More and certainly their transformation over the last decade, the institution has been growing by leaps and bounds. I also think it's critically important as we work ahead this year to really position the academic programs and the research that the university is doing. You take a look at what we're doing at the biology field station, for example, and the work of Dr. Chris Lorenz. the type of research that Thomas More University is being known for in the environmental science area. And, you know, we're attracting students from all across the country for these programs. And I think that speaks to the level of the academic expectation and the work that's being required in teaching and scholarship. So I think Thomas More is making that next critical step from an academic standpoint. And certainly, you can't argue with our athletic success. You know, two national championships in the last 3 years for our women's basketball program. Monday night, CBS Sports did a great piece on two of our female athletes who were recognized by Honda. And I don't think, from my viewpoint, that any other college or university in the country has had that type of success and certainly had that national recognition through Honda. And that speaks volumes in terms of how we're preparing our students both for their academic and co-curricular experience of their lives. And then you take it one step further and you see what our alumni are doing in the workforce. And, you know, this past year we had over 250 employers come into campus. And so it speaks volumes to the reputation that Thomas More has.
And the Thomas More Athletics program has been quite dominant in a lot of areas in Division III of NCAA, but there's a transition coming next season. So it's moving to the NAIA, which some small colleges do compete in. What does that mean? That may be more difficult for people to understand. It's not, you know, NKU in the past decade has gone from Division II to Division I. That's easy to understand because now they're on this really big stage. Right. Explain to us what this means, this transition from NCAA Division III to NAIA.
For us, there was two critical decision points on making that transition. I think one, given our success in the NCAA, especially at the Division III level, was looking at the next step. And so I think logically the NAIA was that opportunity for us because it gave us a chance now to provide our student athletes with scholarship and to compete at a different level. And I think that's the exciting part that our program is going through. When you take a look at the growth of our NCAA sports and you think through in terms of the competition level, I think this is the next logical decision that Thomas More had as it creates its university brand and certainly its position. And it's also going to expose our student athletes to greater challenges and greater competition. But on an academic side, what it also does, it reduces the amount of travel time that our student athletes would experience at the end. You know, if we continue with the NCAA and Division III and conference affiliations that we were in, it continues to require our student athletes to be out of class much more than what the NAIA was offering. So from an academic standpoint, going to the NAIA makes the perfect logical sense and certainly brings us to the next level now to compete at.
I want to get your perspective on just some general college athletics situations. Thomas More was hit by NCAA violations, had to vacate a national women's basketball title after failing to, quote, identify and report a women's basketball student athlete living impermissibly with a former assistant women's basketball coach. That student athlete had a very difficult personal situation.
Correct.
And the coach took her in when she had nowhere to go. And then I think about the way the NCAA's monitoring a violation seems somewhat inconsistent in their execution. You think of high-profile, questionable academic cases like what happened with the University of North Carolina football team, and no punishment at all came from the NCAA for that. But then you have this situation at Thomas More where a coach was really trying to do right by person on a basic level of humanity, and they got hit. So I'm wondering, what do you think? Because your previous institution was also an NCAA Division III school. What are your thoughts on the way athletics programs are monitored by these national governing bodies?
Well, I think it's clear, you know, as you're looking at the NCAA and certainly the last major infractions that college and universities have experienced at all levels from Division I, Division II, and Division III, the NCAA systematically has not done a good job of enforcing its own policies and certainly the outcomes. And I think when you look at Thomas More's situation, you know, you are absolutely right. The coach here was trying to do the right thing, was trying to help a student who was in need. And if we did the right thing, we got punished for it. If we decided to follow the rules and followed something that was so crystal clear in terms of being black and white, the student would have been harmed. You know, the student did not have a place to reside. And I think at the end of the day, I support Thomas More's decision. I certainly support the coach's decision to always do right. And that's part of our value-based education and understanding the needs of the individual. And sometimes you have to make those decisions that are much more difficult on an individual level than it is on an institutional level.
And then what about student athletes in general? Do you think they're treated fairly? We've got this case coming out of California this week where student athletes are now possibly able to capitalize on their own image and the use of their likeness in media. That's been a controversy for a long time. Should they be paid? What do you think of the treatment of student athletes at the collegiate level?
I was a former student athlete, but I don't certainly put myself at the level of the elite Division I student athletes. And I think it's critically important as we look at how our student athletes are being treated. You know, certainly there's an educational benefit and an institutional benefit that an institution receives from the athletic success of these students. Now, you take a look at the amount of funding that the NCAA generates during the Final Four through TV rights and so forth. And unfortunately, the student athletes don't benefit from any of that. Now, some will argue that, and they're absolutely right, our student athletes and are at those levels are receiving scholarships and so forth that will help pay for their education, certainly probably meets all of their educational expenses. But the reality is when you look at basketball, there are so few students who make that transition from the collegiate level to the NBA that their economic opportunities really begin at the college level. And so why should those students be penalized? And I think a lot of things that we see now with student athletes going for 1 year and then making the move to the draft is evident that the system is broken.
Do you expect some major reforms in the next, I don't know, few years?
I don't, Michael. I think the reality of it is the system works for, in many ways, the universities, and it works for the NCAA. There's really not an incentive to make that transition to make it work. And I think, you know, as we look at it and certainly look ahead to the NAIA and our transition to for our student athletes, you know, the opportunity for them to compete at that level and certainly have the educational benefit outweighs some of those other decisions that we have to make.
I want to get your perspective on where Thomas More University fits in the region from an academic standpoint, and we'll continue our conversation with Thomas More University President Dr. Joseph Chillo after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. My guest today is new Thomas More University President, Dr. Joseph Chillo. If you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll look for your comments and tweets and try to get some of those into the show. So, Dr. Chillo, from an academic standpoint, where does Thomas More fit in the metropolitan region of Cincinnati?
Yes. Thomas More University, I think, has a strong position of being a regional provider for Catholic higher education and for higher education in general. When you take a look at our academic programs and majors, they're relevant, they're preparing our students and certainly our alumni for relevant career education. And I think one of the things that's critically important for Thomas More's position here in the region is the fact that we are preparing our students for the industries of today and for tomorrow. And so when you begin to take a look at the job markets, and certainly in the region as we're expanding and growing both in Northern Kentucky and in the Cincinnati metropolitan area, it's going to require to make sure that we have a talented workforce. And this talent begins at the college level. And so when you take a look at our core programs, majors that are relevant today, our faculty are doing an outstanding job of preparing our students for those careers. And I think the thing that sets Thomas More aside here in the region is the fact that we are also preparing them for life and their profession. It's not just about the first job out of college. I think for many families and students, they're always focused on that first job. But the reality of it is, when you take a look at the breadth and the scope of a Thomas More education, we're doing more than that. It's about preparing them for life and about preparing them for a career.
What's the impact of being a Catholic institution? What role does the religion play in the academic thought?
And you see it across the curriculum in a value-based proposition. And students who are both Catholic and non-Catholic feel comfortable at Thomas More. So I think it goes back to what we talked about a little bit earlier. In terms of that welcoming environment, students come across Thomas More, and you know, sometimes the perception might be, here's this Catholic institution, but it's more than that. It's about the value proposition. It's about preparing them to think critically, to look at things in a very critical way so they can understand the cooperation between a strong theoretical foundation in terms of the curriculum along with the experiential and practical learning. So, you know, I think Thomas More does a wonderful job of welcoming all students in to the university. And that Catholic experience, I think, demonstrates our sense of welcoming and our commitment to a strong curriculum.
You come to Thomas More from Newbury College in Brookline, Massachusetts. That school ceased operations in May after 57 years. And you announced the closure yourself. You were president there. You made that announcement on your blog in December. The school was profiled a week ago in The Atlantic. Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, what was that experience like to preside over a school that was preparing to shut down?
And it didn't happen overnight. You know, that's one of the critical things. You know, when I first became president there in 2014, we had a very strong board. And certainly with my role as president, we really laid out a plan for both mergers and acquisitions and also looked at the basis of how we do this the right way. And I've always said that probably the hardest thing in this world in terms of closing an institution is making sure that you do it the right way. There are plenty of examples of doing it the wrong way. And I think the Atlantic article, as well as other coverage that Newbury has had over the year, demonstrates that we were first committed to our people, our faculty, staff, and students, and we made sure that we worked diligently during that time period to make sure that our faculty and staff had homes for the upcoming year, and certainly that every student had every opportunity to continue with their higher education. And so you learned a lot during the process. It kept you up at night for many hours, but you were always worrying about doing the right thing.
You were a first-generation college student?
Mm-hmm, I was.
And The Atlantic noted, citing you, that 70% of Newbury student body were also first-generation college students. I'm curious how you were able to relate to their experience and to help guide them through the loss of that school.
Yeah, being a first-generation college student is truly unique and certainly has made me the person that I am today, because you understand that perspective that's so critically important. And certainly working with students, you can put yourself in their shoes and understand the challenges they have from not having the appropriate role models, maybe not having the appropriate financial resources, and how do you create educational opportunity? And I've been someone who's afforded, you know, their experience and certainly their work to provide students with opportunities. And one of the things that excited me coming to Thomas More was the fact that this institution, you know, studied very in-depth in who they are and made that transformation so that they found themselves in a better foundation and certainly in a stronger position both academically and financially, so they would not face those types of decisions that small tuition-driven institutions like Newbury had to face.
And one of the things you said about Newbury was that it could have been doing more in terms of online education. Online education has completely disrupted the post-secondary landscape. How does Thomas More stay competitive in that realm?
And I think what you're seeing is Thomas More being competitive. And I certainly think you're looking at Thomas More taking the leadership role because it has diversified its revenue stream. You know, when you look at Newbury, for example, at 95, 96% tuition-driven, it was one-dimensional in terms of undergraduate traditional enrollment. You take a look at Thomas More now and you see a robust undergraduate enrollment. You see growth in their adult and graduate programs and their online programs. So the portfolio provides a much richer breadth and scope in terms of creating a stronger financial position. And I think that's what you're going to see Thomas More do over the next decade, is to continue to grow and be the leader in regional Catholic higher education.
What about campus life for students at Thomas More? It's in Crestview Hills. It's a nice campus. And but do you see some areas to improve the student experience for those who might choose to live there?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities here. And I think when you look at the co-curricular experience at Thomas More, it's more than just about that athletics. You know, how students are living on the campus, how they're using the space becomes critically important. And our work is also about making connections to Crestview Hills and Edgewood and the surrounding towns and neighborhoods. Are there ways for Thomas More to have a richer connection with the communities that surround the university so that our students also have that benefit and experience?
The Democratic presidential candidates are debating tonight, and I'm not going to ask you to take a position on that, of course, but we're hearing a proposal about we should get rid of student debt, and that's got a lot of attention, mm-hmm. particularly on social media, and it is a problem in the country, people's credit, finances, burdened by this debt load. Do you think that college is too expensive?
I don't. And here's why. I think many colleges, including Thomas More, do a fabulous job of maintaining affordability. When you take a look at Thomas More's generous financial aid program, students can find a very affordable alternative there in terms of making sure they can afford a college education. I think the critical part here in this national debate and public policy discussion is making sure that our students are being guided correctly in understanding the financial impact of their decisions to attend a college, and also what does it mean in terms of investing in themselves. You know, lots of students equate their debt to the affordability of a car. And I'm sorry, that an education is going to serve you for your life and certainly for your career. The return on investment is substantially more than that. And this notion of free education, I haven't seen anybody value a free education yet. But I think it's critically important that students look at the affordability of colleges. And I think there's a number of college universities here in Northern Kentucky and the metropolitan Cincinnati who do a fabulous job of making sure that education is accessible and affordable.
Well, we also hear conversations even in Northern Kentucky about whether four-year degrees are worth it. Maybe more people should be pursuing two-year degrees and not taking on all of this debt. How does Northern Kentucky as a region and Thomas More's role in that best address the needs of its students by ensuring that the correct path, whether it be 4 years or 2 years, is chosen?
And I think, Michael, that it really goes to, you know, the individual student. You know, I think we have to avoid these broad paint strokes and try to group everybody into that one camp or another camp. And the reality of what we've got to do is make sure that we're preparing students who are going to be successful for life in their professions and their careers, but also take a look at the communities that we serve and the region that we serve. Are we providing the necessary workforce so that the region can continue to grow and to expand? Are we providing the workforce that's going to be necessary for an innovative and creative 21st century economy? And trying to retain that workforce is going to be critically important for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, for the state of Ohio, to make sure that we have the appropriate workforce to be successful. And it starts right at the colleges. And we have to make sure that the colleges are providing that workforce.
What does Thomas More University look like in a few years after 3 or 4 years with Joseph Chillo as its president?
I think you're going to find and continue to find the expansion and growth that Thomas More has been experiencing. You're going to find an agile university that is focused on the creative and innovative approach and an entrepreneurial spirit. I think all the things that you're seeing at Thomas More today is preparing it for the future and certainly the path, and it will be the regional leader in Catholic higher education.
Our thanks to Dr. Joseph Chillo for joining us today. Please, somebody get this man some chili. You have a very close name. Chillo's Chili would be a great business opportunity if the school thing doesn't work out.
Chilling with chili. There we go.
I love that.
Michael, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for being here. And just ahead, it's now a landmark in Cincinnati. But when the giant sculpture involving flying pigs was first proposed, there was lots of squealing about how it reflected the city's image. A look back on the controversy of the Cincinnati Gateway at Bicentennial Commons. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. I'm Michael Monks. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org.